This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Today, books. People you want to meet, people you want to talk to, and I'm talking about people who write books and publish books and make beautiful books. We are going to get bookish for the next hour. Stay with me. Yes, we are talking cravings. Hello, it's a minute past one. No news today. There's an old song about that. No milk today. But no news today. So you're with me for the entire hour until 2 o'clock. Thank you to Dean Beck. My co-host who's normally sitting in the studio with me, who is somebody that Darren knows because he is in the world of the sweets. And somebody Jeanette probably knows as well because he should be in Flavours of Melbourne or Flavours of Victoria. His name is Tad Lombardo and it is cheese-tacular going on at Pran Market. We couldn't drag him away. Tad, good afternoon. Hello, we haven't got Tad. I'll have to try and call him back in a minute. But I do have people in the studio. So with me, Darren Purchase. You've met him before. You know who he is. He's done MasterChef. He is the sweets man. He makes Zumbo look like some regional New South Wales hack that he is. Darren Purchase, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I love coming back here.
It's good to have you back. I love having you here in the studio, and you always bring me sweet treats.
I hope that's not the only reason you love
No, no. Well, it's really funny because you know I don't have a sweet tooth.
That's right.
That's why I love this whole cheese thing that's going on at Pran Market.
Well, it sounds like Tad's really enjoying himself as well.
I'll try him on the other line in a second. We'll have a bit of a yarn first. And somebody you haven't met before, but you would have seen her work everywhere, is Jeanette George. Flavours of Melbourne, Flavours of Melbourne 2, now Flavours of Bali, and tucked under her arm is Flavours of Victoria. She's a book publisher extraordinaire, I should say. Jeanette, welcome to Cravings.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, I'm delighted to have you because I have all of your books.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Although I don't have that one that's on the desk, so we'll do a negotiation with it after the show. Tell us a little bit about Smudge Publishing.
Well, Smudge Publishing started probably 8 years ago when my daughter finished her communications degree.
Yep.
And I suggested that rather than do a regular resume, why don't we do a book and put a name in it? So we went down we went down to the Mornington Peninsula and just started talking to the wineries and chefs and restaurants and producers and put a book together. And I think we just loved it so much that we're still crazily doing it all around Australia and now internationally as well.
And the rest, as they say, is history. Do you take unsolicited ideas from other people to publish under your company?
We do. We generally do our own products because, you know, that's our passion. Food and wine and culinary destinations is really our genre. But we do custom books and we do publish books for other people as well.
Good, we need to have another chat after this show.
No worries.
And Darren, you might be looking for a new publisher. I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say that at all.
I'm very happy with the guys at Harder Grant, but I certainly Smudge do some great stuff, so congratulations.
Thank you.
How many books have you done, Darren?
That's my second published. I'm working on my third at the moment, so
and
busy.
Your third is all about my passion. You finally got away from the sweets, and we're talking about... Can I allow to tell people what your
book
is?
Yeah, do it, yeah.
It's about grilled cheese.
Yeah, it's going to be toasted sandwiches. That'll be out next year, and it's something that's very close to my heart. Being from UK, I lived on toast and
sarnies.
I've got Kath to chip in with a few killer savoury recipes as well. So hopefully it'll be really good.
And Middle Eastern flavours maybe with the cheese.
Yeah, it's a couple. It's going to be a few different influences in there. And like I say, it's really handy having Kath there. So I need a recipe for this, and she's got one, and it's an absolute killer as well. So,
and for those that don't know, Kath is your partner in life and partner in work as well. Kath Claringbold herself, a well recognised and respected chef.
Yep, she's back at the shop now and
working hard. She'll have the wireless turned up, but yeah,
we'll have it on
to us, will she?
Yeah. We'll have it on. We'll stick it on when I'm on the radio.
Excellent. Hello to everybody who is in at Birch and Purchase in Chapel Street in South Yarra. We've had a message already. I love a good cookbook and I love Mr. Purchase. Always a good stocking filler, if you know what I mean. That's from somebody called Donna Frock.
Donna
Frock, I think you'll work
I'm
that
flattered.
One.
I'm flattered. I'm blushing.
You'll work that one out. What is it about books? I'm in the process of packing up a house and doing some renovations, and every time my other half sort of goes near this pile or this shelf of books, I start to get a little tetchy and sort of want to, you know, do a bit of a hip and shoulder, get him out of the way of my books, because I'm really attached to food books, and I'm not sure if I'm unhealthy. Jeanette, you'll be able to answer this.
No.
Or most people's houses are the same. There's a certain genre of books that we like. Mine are all to do with food.
Yeah.
Well, I think books are such a tactile, wonderful, emotional experience that you do invest so much in it, and it gives you so much pleasure you don't want to give that experience away. So I think there are a lot of us that have boxes and boxes or bookshelves full of books that we absolutely love, and even if we lend it to someone, we want that book back.
Oh, if I'm to lend somebody a book, I have to see their driver's license,
exactly.
Two bank statements, and a whole bunch. So I'm terrible when I lend books.
And then harass them to get it back.
Yeah. And every book is, if it's not signed by the author to Pete, blah, 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 then it has Pete Dillon in it, so I have to get it back.
Right.
Yeah, it's terrible. No, well, it's terrible. I was almost going to start running library cards because I'm really like you. There is a... I'm into modern technology and I can read a book on my iPad, but there's something about touching, particularly food books, there's something about touching a book that has, you know, the odd bended corner, or there's a little bit of a fat stain from when I've had it on the shelf cooking. I've got all of Heston's books. None of them have got any stains on them because I can't cook from them in my own kitchen. But, you know, there's that well-worn page of a particular recipe that comes from a particular book. I think it's Ruth from the River Cafe in London, one of their books, which is so well-worn on one particular page because I just love it.
Well, I find people, when they open out books, they actually start patting them. So they're very tactile, but people pat the photos, and it's just this extraordinary tactile experience that you watch with people. I love it.
Will books ever die? You know how they talk about, radio's going to die, print's going to die, magazines will never exist at some point, TV's going to carker.
Can I jump in there? Yeah. Because when we started our business, everyone said, you know, you're crazy, books are not going to survive, they're really dead. We've totally bucked that trend and really went against that trend. We're also told to create low-cost, cheaper versions of books, and I said, no, if I'm going to go to the effort of creating a book, it's going to be the biggest and best I possibly can. So our first book was the biggest book probably ever printed in Australia because I wanted to, and I could, and now I don't have to do that anymore. But we produce really beautiful artisan products, and that's what it's about.
All of your books, I just love that. There's a love. I got food poisoning at that place. I won't talk about that one. they're just
a Bali one.
Yeah, they're lovely to open up and just particularly if I'll refer to the flavours of Melbourne 1 and 2. Darren, you're in number 2, where you sort of open up and you go, oh, I've forgotten that place, or I haven't been there in a couple of years. I have to go back and just check it out. It's kind of, they're beautiful reminders of places we've been, but places that we have to go back and visit.
And exactly why we put the signature recipes in there. And a lot of people don't even cook them, but it's really food porn.
Mm.
They're looking at that photo and wishing they could have it, and that's what attracts them to that restaurant. I've got to go and have that, or food like that.
Yeah.
So that picture says more than all the words you could ever write about a restaurant.
Darren, how important are pictures in your books?
So important. I was fortunate enough to have a really talented photographer called Patricia Niven, who's Australian but London-based, come over and shoot this book. And the feel of this book was... it's different to all the other stuff I've made. It's kind of more homey, more accessible. And I was trying to make my food quite perfect, and she was sort of saying, no, don't wipe that drip. Let's leave that there. Leave it in the tin. Because that was the kind of feel, that the vision she saw. So although I came up with all the recipes and, you know, this is my book, there's certainly a huge input on her part for the look of the book. And I think that the book's better for that. So it's a collaboration.
I imagine if you want people to cook out of your book and to take the book off the shelf and open it up and cook that lemon tart or cook the chocolate thingamajig,
yeah.
You want them to be able to look at it and go, oh, that's doable. I can, yes. I can do this in my kitchen without a Thermomix and something to freeze dry raspberries and a sous vide
exactly.
machine
exactly.
and all of that crap that we don't need.
Yeah.
You need a good mixer and you need a good blender. That's about it, I reckon, in your house. You want to be able to recreate it, and seeing a little bit of a drip off the side of a spoon yeah. or a bit of icing sugar that went on the bench or the tea towel, sort of, it actually makes it a little bit more real.
No, I agree. On the front cover, there's the chocolate cake, and I was really trying to make that nice and sort of flat, and the glazing, you know, absolutely perfect. And it didn't work. It didn't fit in with the book, and the advice I was getting, you know, kind of leave those drips there, and because that means that I can make this, you know. And she was sort of saying, from her experience as being a novice cook, and she was saying, I feel like I could make this particular one because it's not perfect, but all the recipes are super tested in my kitchen at home, and using sort of tins that I just found, and I kind of I've scaled my recipes back to use the tin that I've got at home, and it'll be the tin that you've got, and there's literally no funny ingredients and no crazy equipment you need for that.
And again, whilst it's aspirational, because I want to look at this and say, that looks like a clafoutis that I can make, I don't want it to look perfect. Yeah. I want it to be a little tarnished on one end, or where yeah. the oven hasn't been quite right, because the ovens in our house are not quite right. Doesn't matter how
exactly.
bloody good your oven is, there's one part of the oven that just burns the corner of something.
I found that when we shot this at home, and I was cooking everything at home in my oven, and yeah, you're right, the sort of back left was hotter than the front right. But you are right, you want to be able to envisage yourself making it, and also with that that sort of clafoutis type tart thing on the front that you can see there, you don't have to use that fruit, you can switch your own fruit, you can, it was kind of,
we're
giving
coming
you,
into stone fruit season, there
yeah,
could
exactly.
be nectarines or something off the neighbor's
yeah.
tree that you want to use.
So literally this cookbook is just a base idea of things that you could actually do, and you could take the sponge from the chocolate cake recipe and pair it with the cream from the choux recipe or the lemon curd, and kind of come up with your own creations. And that's what I really wanted to try and get across.
Jeanette, is it hard to do books and get the imagery right?
Oh, no. If you've got a good photographer, our head photographer is my second daughter. And I think you need a creative eye to do food photography. So if you've got that creativity, you can get out of the chef's head, what he's really envisaging,
yeah.
and then get it on paper.
See, I'm a chef as well as all this other crap that I do. I don't cook now. I cook for love. I'll never cook for money. But I've got this thing about if I'm... The book that I've actually had my book knocked back twice, so...
Oh, we better talk.
Yeah, we better talk. But the photography for me is if I'm going to tell a story about a chef that became a chef because he was either that or going to juvenile justice... And there was a particular time in his life where he was really close to his grandmother, or, you know, all the chefs have beautiful stories about why they cook.
Mm.
And we know where they cook and we know what they cook. And there's, you know, a million books about, no disrespect, Darren, that have
yeah.
beautiful photography. But I think there's stories to be told about where they've come from.
And that's the whole point of a book, is the story.
Correct. And so
it's the
images,
writer. Well, it's
yeah.
the writer, number one, who gets it out of someone's head. And number two, it's the photographer who gets it out of their head.
Mm.
And that produces the wonderful book.
But would old images work?
Yeah, yeah.
Good. We'll have a conversation. But first, we've got to have a couple of messages. And we're going to try and get Tad on the phone. I'm having some IT issues here at the minute, and our radio man's not here. So stick with me. It's 14 minutes past one. You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9. We're running a bit loose today, but we're all about books. It's all about the book.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Yes, you are at 16 minutes past one. Jeanette George from Smudge Publishing and Darren Purchase from Birch & Purchase Suite Studio in the studio with me. We're going to try Tad Lombardo again. He's over at the Pran Market. It is their cheese-tacular today. And Tad, are you there? Have we got you? No, we're really having a trouble with our phones today, so maybe we're going without Tad, which will make our next, this message, Linda's going to be unhappy, because Linda is Tad's mum.
Oh.
And she says, hello, Tad and Pete from New Providence in New Jersey, the USA, enjoying the show tonight. So it's nighttime, it's Friday night over there, and each Friday night Linda listens in and via the Joy app. And enjoys the show
with
us.
Cool.
But Linda, I'm really sorry that Tad's busy with the cheese today and I can't get him on the phone, so we're having some trouble with our
sorry,
our
Linda.
Telephones.
He's having a great time, though.
He's eating too much cheese.
He's got his face in a camembert.
Well, no, he's there each time I ring, but I can't get him to air. So I think there's something going wrong with the studio. It's not Tad's fault. So Tad will be back next week and we'll talk to him next week about
then.
The cheese.
Yep.
Indeed. I like this. Do you do all of the media and communications and stuff that goes with the book? So each time a book is released, you've got to write press releases and do all of that business?
Yes, we do.
And that's why your daughter did a communications degree?
She did. I'm not sure if it helps, but we've got a whole team of kids that we have our whole digital team that put a lot of effort in. And, yes, we obviously try to communicate with all the journos around Australia.
There's a foreword here that I really like to Darren's book. He says, think of Darren as a cross between Yoda, a Michelin-starred pastry chef, and a sharp-eyed grandmother who has a sofa upholstered in country show baking ribbons, but with better hair.
Who said that?
I'm going to give you three guesses as to who said that. He's a very large, loquacious, cravatted Englishman.
Starts with an M.
Yeah. Matt Preston, that's a really nice way for people to describe you.
It's certainly unique. Matt's a great guy, and he wrote the foreword on my first book as well. And when I asked him to do this, he dropped everything and did it. So I want to thank him for doing that.
He's a good bloke.
He's a very good supporter of me.
And you do look like Yoda.
Say Matt Preston.
This morning.
I was going to go with a Michelin-starred chef, but I think maybe a sharp-eyed grandmother.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
I'm sorry, your book is called Lamington's Lemon Tarts.
Correct.
And, Jeanette, you've got four in the flavours series?
No, there's actually, I think we've done 25 books now. So the flavours, we've done Melbourne, Urban Melbourne, Sydney, Urban Sydney. We've done flavours of Queensland, South Australia, New South Wales and Victoria now. We've done flavours of Bali and we've just started Tasmania and New Zealand.
Wow.
So we're busy bees getting around.
Who does all your research? Do you just get to jet around the region and eating and drinking and looking at lovely places?
I don't know that you'd call it jetting around, but yes, we do get to go. I spent probably 6 months in Bali doing the Bali book.
In one big hit?
In several hits. Mm. And photographers crossing paths and, you know, we put a lot of time and effort into each book.
Because it is a beautiful book. I think as I was looking through this, I've had a couple of trips to Bali. The most recent was only in December, and I hadn't been for 20 years before that. And I was
changes.
Well, the first time I went to Bali, it was like Legian and Kuta, and it was
awful.
In the early 90s. It was ghastly. I hated it. And I vowed and declared I would never go back. But my husband loves Bali.
Yeah.
And so after we had a little FU to the government wedding in December, we decided we would go to Bali and have a couple of weeks of a break. And I just found all of these places to eat and enjoy food that were outstanding, and I think, you know, world class.
Absolutely,
in my mind.
World class.
And I found some of them in here, so I opened up and I said, oh my god, there's Mama-san in Seminyak, and there's I did open one before, which is a place I did actually get food poisoning, so we won't talk
we
about
won't
that particular
that
place. But I've been to Ubud and in Canggu, and there's just Bali's food scene has gone absolutely berserk.
As a culinary destination, it is really world class. I have to mention one restaurant up in Ubud, Locavore.
Oh, it's amazing.
The chef up there is just doing extraordinary things, you know, really top of the world class. Mm. Absolutely brilliant. But there are so many chefs up there that are so passionate. They've worked out.
A lot of Aussie chefs up there.
Yeah. But they've got into the local produce scene and really, you know, they're restricted by what they can bring into that country. So their ability to put menus together is quite difficult.
Mm.
But they're using and they're growing their own, and it's just extraordinary what they're producing.
It is. Did you meet Chris Sellens while you were up there?
No. Oh. I didn't.
Chris Sellens does a he has a cooking school up there as well. He's an American guy.
Yep.
A big sort of burly American who's you can't imagine him finessing anything in the kitchen, because he's just like, he's got hands like shovels and fingers like bananas. But he's really, really cool. He runs some cooking schools up there, and he has a I'm trying to think of the name of his little restaurant. It's not anywhere on the tourist route. It's a bit more out of the way. But he's fascinating. I met him through Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. He was down here doing masterclasses. Fascinating bloke.
Well, and Janet Deneef up in Ubud has really done wonders for the country, for bringing in tourism for the Writers' Festival, but now she's started the Food and Wine Festival for the last 2 years, and, you know, she's really helped the culinary scene and put a spotlight on it.
Maybe, Darren, we have to go to the Ubud Food and Wine Festival.
It sounds good. I've never been to Bali. That's why I've been keeping quiet. I've been listening. Right. This book looks amazing. I love all that cuisine. But I've never been. Yeah,
so through this.
I'll have a flick through this and choose some spots, and maybe me and Kath can sneak out for a couple of weeks.
You could go up for a week.
When's the best time to go?
When the tourists aren't all there. So don't go in December, January.
Yeah.
Right.
And don't go in school holidays.
Right. I'll be busy anyway.
Definitely not schoolies.
And don't spend too much time in Kuta and Legian, because that's all bintang singlets and all very nasty. There is some good food in both of those, but Seminyak at the moment. Seminyak's food is outstanding.
Seminyak is extraordinary. There's the cafe in the centre of Seminyak called Sister Fields. Is an Aussie bloke who's gone up there and doing extraordinary things. He's really determined to have the best coffee, the best cafe food. And it's international food. It's not just Asian. You know, he's fused the whole lot together and come up with something really extraordinary.
Did you get to go up into the foothills or up in the hills where they grow into the rice paddies and drink luwak coffee?
Well, I'm a coffee freak. So yes. We do specialty coffee books as well. So yeah. I'm currently writing the biography of our Australian who won the World Barista Championships.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Coffee is really important to me, so I went up to Kintamani to the farms and met the farmers and producers, and they're doing some wonderful things with their coffee up there, getting it back on track and into a good state. Often Bali coffee is pretty crap.
Oh, it is pretty crap. but there's also, I think, half the problem with our expectation of Bali coffee is the milk, because Balinese milk is just not like our milk.
No.
You can't get good dairy like you do here. So people go over and say, the coffee's really shit in Bali. And it's like, well, no, it's different. It's not shit.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people doing really hard work in getting that coffee scene in Bali to where it should be. And you can go and buy good coffee.
Oh, absolutely. You can buy good coffee. It's just you can also buy really dreadful coffee.
Yeah. Just don't expect it to taste like Australian coffee.
Yeah, but I think you can. There's Revolver up there. There are a few people who are doing some fantastic things, and you know they are getting some milk from somewhere that isn't too bad. So
it's just the Balinese milk. You'd hate it. You couldn't cook with it. It'd go nuts.
We're very lucky in Melbourne. We're fortunate to have so much good stuff. So when you do go overseas, sometimes you can compare back to home, and it's not quite the same. But I think you should just kind of look for the local specialties.
But as travellers, don't you go somewhere to experience a culture that is different to your own? Or you go, even if it is, you go to New Zealand, you go to experience something that you can't have at home. And at home, here we can have the best coffee in the world. So the expectation of going somewhere that is, you know, semi-third world, for crying out loud, to have an expectation you're going to get a latte like you're going to get in Elwood or in Fitzroy is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And you're a moron if you think that that's going to happen.
Oh, but there, seriously, if you know where to go in Bali, you can, you know, within half an hour get a really good coffee.
I agree with you, and I found some. This is why your book is so good. It's like trying to get a decent bottle of wine in Bali.
Oh, well, that's more difficult.
It is categorically screwed. if you expect that you're going to go over and buy, you know, a nice bottle of Australian Riesling for 18 or 20 bucks, no, it's not going to happen. Their liquor stores are different. They have import issues that they can't buy decent wine. We found in Seminyak a beautiful little French shop that was selling beautiful French cheeses and pâtés and a South African Chenin Blanc, both of which were outstanding, which we took up to Ubud for Christmas. But, you know, you go somewhere, you've got to expect that you're going somewhere to have an experience that's different.
Well, that's throughout Asia. The taxes that they put on alcohol are extraordinary. So there's nothing really under $50 that you would drink
Bali. And so that's why you drink beer, or that's why you drink gin. Because that stuff is everywhere in Bali. It's 26 minutes past one. You're with Jeanette George and Darren Purchase. We are taking you through a little bit of a wander through books. We're actually getting distracted talking about the coffee plantations of outside of Ubud in Bali. I want to go back to the Luwak coffee in just a second because it's a very, very funny story. And Darren, you'll love this, and you'll end up using Luwak coffee in your desserts, I swear. It is 27 minutes past one.
G'day, I'm Pete Evans, and you are with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Thank you, Paleo Pete. It is just after 1:30. You're here on Joy 94.9. Cravings, I'm flying solo today. Tad's doing the cheese spectacular at the Pran Market. I'm very upset that I'm not there eating cheese and he's not here in the studio because, Darren, I think he'll be able to talk technically to you about the couverture chocolates and all sorts
Tad's
of things.
Tad's amazing. His he skills is
incredible.
Are unbelievable.
You know, Tad's an engineer.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I know he started. He started late, I think, into food. And
yes, he's late to food, but he's very talented.
He's flourishing.
He is. Started making chocolates with Ben Shuri, of course, of all people.
Yeah,
you know, because he's a slouch.
as you do.
Yes, indeed. We were talking just before that little song, which was called The Book Song by Frente from their album, Marvin album. It had another very famous song on there, but we don't talk about that one. So, yes, that was called The Book Song, because today we are talking about books, and we were talking about Luwak coffee. Now, for those of you who weren't with us just before, Luwak is a kind of coffee that is predominant in parts of Indonesia. And it's produced, and Jeanette, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. A Luwak is like a weasel. It's like a civet, a sort of cat type. They're very, very cranky creatures. Yes. They're not something you want to pet. They're like a really angry meerkat.
Right.
And so the Luwaks eat the beans as they drop from the coffee palm. And they go through a fermentation process as the beans make their way through the body, and then they exit the Luwak,
right?
And are collected and roasted.
Am I
on the money?
You are on the money. I'll let you finish your story and I'll do mine.
So this coffee, they serve a lot up in the hills. It's quite a tourist thing to go and drink Luwak coffee. It's insanely bitter and acidic. It's not pleasant. You wouldn't make a latte out of it. And I know so many people who've bought some home because they've been caught up in that tourist moment. They've had it up in the hills and thought, oh, this is great. I'm going to take this home and I'm going to give Auntie Val some, and it tastes like dirt. It's not good coffee, but it's...
The truth is it's a word that starts with SH. I'm not sure if I can say that on radio.
Well, it exits end of the Luwak, so that it does taste like shit is not a surprise.
Who first worked this out? Like, you know, someone very desperate for a cup of coffee.
It was someone desperate for, you know, a marketing angle, really. Right. And so it's not just Luwaks. The truth is the Luwaks are put in these horrible cages and they're force-fed coffee beans.
Like,
oh, my God,
fruit.
Really?
And that's all they can get to eat. So then they do have to shit it out. And, you know, it's dreadful tasting stuff. But they also do it with elephants. And it has gone so far that even humans have done it. So,
okay, I would have to draw the line of going through someone's poop to find a couple of coffee beans. I've never been that hard up for a cup of coffee.
No. Look, we have such stunning coffee in Australia. We're known as the coffee capital of the world in Melbourne. So, you know, we don't have to stoop that low.
We don't indeed. And this is a question to both of you, what's the hardest part? You know, you sit down, you go, okay, I'm ready for another book. I've done the research, I've got this stuff. What's the really difficult part about putting a book together? Is it writing that very first word, or is it working out what the last word is?
For me, sorry, excuse me.
You've got all emotional on
that. I know. I've not every chef writes their own cookbook.
A lot of them are ghostwritten.
A lot of them have got people to do. I write all of mine.
My friend Hilary McNevin, she's a great writer.
Yeah, she is. Yeah,
she's written a lot.
I'm either foolish or I don't know. I just feel like I wanted to write it. So finding time to actually get it down is really hard. I think making notes along the way. You know, if you come up with a great idea that you need to include in the book, like get these notes down because you're going to forget them. I have found a cool little trick in terms of I was really trying to make the recipes work. In all my cookbooks, obviously, I want these recipes to work because I want people to say, you know, I tried Darren's brownie, it's amazing, and then word gets round. But I was spending lots of time trying to get it to actually fit that tin perfectly. I think what I've worked out now is get the recipe down as far as I know it, and then on the photo shoot when we're shooting all the dishes, I can kind of cook it, and then I can kind of amend recipes during the shoot.
And there's a bit of smoke and mirrors with the styling for a book, that if there is a little bit of something and you've got to glaze or decorate something, that you can use that glaze or decoration to cover a very minor error.
Yeah, you can. But also when I was shooting this book, especially for one of the dishes, I was going to do something completely different. And then we went down the market to get some fruit for one of the dishes, and we saw this other great produce that wasn't included in the book, and it looked amazing. So we said, we've got to try and incorporate this somewhere. So I put it into one of the dishes in the book virtually last minute during the shoot, and then I amended the recipe after that.
But you want to be able to cook with what's in season and what is it that at the market or the grocer.
Exactly. Mm. So that was it's quite liberating for me now to know that I can kind of amend recipes during the shoot because, you know, I want to make the last minute change. And I found that whole thing has made the process easier for me. So I can just get the base recipes down now and finesse it during the shoot.
And I'm assuming that because so much of what you do is so precise, particularly in the shop, that it is so, you have to be so precise down to the last sort of gram, otherwise things don't work.
You do, especially in the shop, but obviously people at home haven't got these scales that measure 1 gram, so I'm trying to make
well,
sure.
Well, depends what they're weighing.
Yeah, I know. Maybe some of your listeners, I'm not sure. But, you know, you need it to be accessible to people if you want people to cook out of the book. So changing some of my precise measurements to tablespoons has been a bit tricky. But I've kind of done that lately, especially in this book.
And that's why you're a sharp-eyed grandmother with a sofa.
Exactly, it's all in there.
Bacon ribbons. Jeanette, what's the hardest thing for you? I mean, obviously you do all of your research and your travel, and you know, or you have an idea in your head of what you want to see on the page. Does it always work like that?
Well, ours have a unique sort of formula. I think the reason behind our books is as a culinary destination. So we're showcasing a whole load of chefs, a whole load of venues. Mm. So our storyline is always trying to get to know the person underneath or know the business underneath. And in our recipes, we're really working with the chef to try to make it as easy as possible at home. But we're really trying to showcase a whole destination. So I see it as a collaboration between probably 100 chefs, and we all get together and just get this book together. And for us, it's not just the writing or photography, it's the design, it's the getting it to press.
It's choosing the stock. It's creating those incredible covers that all of the books have.
Yeah, we get illustrators and illustrators from that region so that they know the locale. It's a huge effort that we get to put this book to bed, and then when the first box arrives, you know, we open it, we all sit around in a circle, and it's like giving birth to a baby, you know. Has it got 10 arms or 10, 10 fingers, you know, 10 toes? Is it okay?
How long does it take? And I know it's like how long is a piece of string. But, and Darren, think about this because I'm coming back to you. How long does it take you to actually take the idea of a book and say, why don't we do the flavours of New Zealand?
Yes.
From that minute that you have that epiphany at 3 o'clock in the morning, to the point where it does arrive and you open the box and you go, oh my God, and you're weeping and you're opening a champagne at the same time. How long is that process?
Possibly from the idea, it's 12 months because we have to put timelines in place, but it actually takes us, it's a 6 to 7 month process by the time the book comes back to our door. So it's a lot of work, but we've got, you know, a lot of people out there doing the research, doing the photography and putting it together. So we're basically, these flavours books, we're doing one, we're starting one every 2 months. And
wow.
There are so many places in the world. We want to do flavours in New York. You know, I'm so excited about it.
Let me know when you need a researcher for that one.
Yeah. But it is. It's opening the door of that restaurant, and they let us in. You know, they let us. We have access to the chef. We have access to where they're getting their produce from. It's just such an exciting journey.
Darren, do you have a favourite place to eat in New York that you found a little coolish joint?
Not a little coolish. I got married in New York,
yeah.
So we had lunch at Per Se. So rather than having the big
wedding Keller,
in Melbourne, we got our wedding bands in the morning at Tiffany's. Went down the town hall, got married. Lasted about 2 minutes. The ceremony. It was quite funny. And then we went for lunch at Per Se. And I think that evening we had pizza that evening.
Yeah, nice. Oh,
it was really good. Cute. It was really good. It was cute. It was me and Kath and her uncle, who's also an author. He's an Australian author, Peter Carey.
That's Kath's uncle.
Yeah, he was our witness because he'd got married in New York as well, and so he showed us how to do it. We had to turn up the day before, and sort of register it, and they give you a 24-hour calling off,
yeah,
and then
do.
We turn up the next day, and he was our witness, and we went for lunch.
Did Peter Carey write Oscar and Lucinda?
Yes.
Yes, and also a Kelly, a Ned Kelly story.
The history of the Ned Kelly
gang. The gang, yeah.
He's won a couple of Booker Prizes,
I think. He's a fantastic bloke.
He's super talented, and he still lives in New York, so we'll catch up with him when we go over.
Exactly. You have to go to Prune. There is no question. Gab Hamilton. So she's a fascinating woman, but she has... It's only a small restaurant. I think it's about 20 or 30 seats, but you have to go and eat at Prune. She's amazing. To me, that is sort of kind of quintessential New York. It's 18 minutes to 2. We're off on all sorts of tangents here with these books. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Anna De Silva, and you're listening to Cravings with Pete Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are correct. Thank you, Mr. De Silva. I know you're busy, but popping in and giving us that message. Jeanette George is teasing us today. She's a book publisher called Smudge Publishing, and doing all these flavours books, and she's about to go and do Flavours of New York, and Darren and I are both busy looking at our schedules to see when we can go and assist with some research.
All of a sudden my diary's freed up.
Yeah, exactly. Darren Purchase is that voice, of course, from the Birch and Purchase Suite Studio on Chapel Street,
647.
South Yarra.
Yes, correct. Yes.
It's a lovely shop. Have you been into Darren's shop?
Yes, absolutely. It's fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, indeed. Now, I'm asking a question of Linda. Linda listens to us every week in New Jersey. Linda, if we're going to do Taste of New York, we have to do Jersey, and I need to know where is the best place to eat in New Jersey. Maybe it's in New Providence. Maybe it's in Hoboken. Maybe in Jersey City, but I'm sure Linda will send us an email and tell us because she listens every week. You can send us an email, text 0427JOY949 if you would like to tell us about your dining destination that must be covered in one of Jeanette's books. You can email onair@joy.org.au or you can phone 1-300-JOY949 and speak to our lovely person on the desk. I think Alex is still sitting out there. If not, I'm sure Anne will answer the phone and talk to you as well. Where is your flavour of that you must partake in? It might be for Jeanette's next book. And it's a beautiful 10 degrees outside and it's raining. I just had a look at this filthy grey sky.
I love spring. It's beautiful.
Well, I was listening to the weather guy today. He said, you know, at this time of October we can have 31 degrees or, as it was when I was driving in earlier today, 8 degrees.
Well, my parents are up in Noosa and they're listening today.
Hello, Jeanette's parents. I'm there. I'll be with you tomorrow.
Yes, I think it's about 30 degrees up there and absolutely beautiful. So you do wonder what on earth we're doing down here.
I'm going up to Noosa tomorrow for work.
I'm there
until Wednesday and it better be bloody warm, I tell you. If it rains when I get to Noosa, someone's going to be getting just a little snitchy, even though I am there for work. I will be at Ricky's on Tuesday night. They're having their 10 years of Ricky's.
No way.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Blimey. So I'll be there. It's part of his work. It's part of my my work.
You'll have to take up one of our Flavours of Queensland books.
Have you got one with you?
I haven't got one with me, but I could get one to you first thing in the morning.
That'd be awesome.
It's got a lot of the Noosa people in it.
Cool, because I will be, as of February, in Noosa almost permanently, because for the next 3 years, I think I'm allowed to announce this now, for 2017, 18 and 19, the business I work with will be delivering the next three Noosa Food and Wine Festivals. So
I'm wonderful.
Sort of kind of going to be handling the programs and partnerships and PR, so I'm sort of kind of the festival director in, for want of a better term, for the next 3 years. For
I'm so excited about that, because it really needed to have a broader base.
It's an amazing place, and the produce and the people around Noosa, and it's not just Noosa, that whole Sunshine Coast region is
And that whole hinterland is just
beautiful.
Amazing.
It's beautiful. They do wine up in the hinterland.
Oh, absolutely. Ooh,
good job, Pete. When's the next festival, then?
18th to the 21st of May 2017, four-day festival.
And we're packing our bags coming too.
Excellent. Yeah. And, of course, we'll be putting out a little note if people want to volunteer at the festival. You make your own way up there, and you can be a volunteer over the 4 days.
That's great. It's a good opportunity to work with some amazing chefs and food people and producers.
It's extraordinary.
It's one of the things about that festival in particular is that it's not a them and us. You're not separated from people. It's a small town. The chefs are wandering around the streets, slopping around in their loafers early in the day, looking for coffee like the rest of us. So it's a great festival. It's a great feel. It's a great place to be.
I like that it's changed its name from International Food and Wine to Noosa, because Noosa is such a special place, and it really felt a bit fragmented earlier. But there's no shortage of great coffee up there.
Oh, correct. Thankfully. And there'll only probably be one or two international chefs for the first festival that we do for 2017. Most of them, unless they're internationals who live in Australia already. So people that we can bring up, like Darren, who might come up and be part of a Mad Hatter's Tea Party that we're doing.
Oh, can I come too?
That sounds good. So you don't need all these international chefs as well, because there's so many talented people sort of cooking in Australia and Queensland and close to home. So
there are international chefs in the space. Ian Curley is part of the British Brat Pack, like Ray Capaldi and Greg Maloof. And there's a whole bunch of people who live and work and call Australia home, but who come from quite diverse cultural backgrounds that we're going to be able to work with as well. So,
that's just brilliant. Love it.
And from New Providence, New Jersey, the email I was after, we have a wonderful new restaurant, Mo's Bistro, in New Providence, New Jersey. Mohammed's from Egypt. His food is wonderful. He makes wonderful Vidalia onion and coconut soup. What a great eating experience. You must try it. There you go. New Providence, New Jersey. Go and eat at Mo's.
Very excited.
Is that Linda?
That's Linda.
Well done, Linda. That was a little test there. We've just seen if you're still listening, because
when you might have nodded off. Linda likes to come to Australia as well, and Tad takes her around, so we'll have to make sure we get Tad to bring Linda to your store.
He knows where the shop is, so tell him to pop down. Bring you down.
Because if you're the Willy Wonka of Melbourne's Melbourne's sweets, Tad's probably a bit more the...
I don't know, yeah.
He's very not Willy Wonka.
He's not, is he?
No.
I'm trying
to
think.
Quite the opposite. We'll come up with who is the opposite to Willy Wonka, but he's very talented. And I can say that all because he's not here today.
Yeah, otherwise he'd get a big head.
Yeah. and, of course, you should be popping down to see Tad at the Pran Market. The Cheese Festival is on at the Pran Market today. So if you're driving around in this weather and getting frustrated on your way to IKEA or whatever you do on Saturday when you're listening to us, just pop into the Pran Market. It's Cheese Day today. Another Cheese Festival coming up tomorrow. We met a guy a couple of weeks ago on the show. He's got the Williamstown Cheese and Wine Festival tomorrow. You can Google that on your favourite search engine, which I may have already told you to use. So there's a Cheese and Wine Festival tomorrow. And on the 10th of November, for 10 days, there is a cheese festival called Bon Fromage.
Oh, yes.
10 days.
10 days celebrating the fine cheeses of Europe.
Oh, and that's just going to be brilliant.
European cheese for 10 days.
You need 10 days for European cheese.
Well, it starts Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then through the week it's all sort of industry and media stuff, and then the second weekend, again, open to the public at the back of King and Godfrey in Carlton.
Oh, cool. Is that a new thing? I haven't.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
It is. Called Bon Fromage. Google it, you'll find it. On your favourite search engine.
Yeah.
We are talking books today. are we going to get to a critical mass? And I'm going to start with you, Jeanette and Darren. I know you'll have thoughts. Are we going to get to a critical mass where we can't possibly need another bloody cookbook? Or is there always going to be something new, another region, another culture, another identity to explore?
It goes on forever. I think we're always looking for exciting new angles in cooking and discovering new produce and new ways of doing things and new ways of blending it together. So again, it's how long is a piece of string?
I think I'm very pleased to hear that, by the way.
Oh, absolutely.
It just means I build another room.
Well, and you know, through our travels, we've just been really lucky with our Coffee Encounters book. We went to lots of coffee origins through Central America and South America and Africa and God knows where.
But every time
PNG, yep. Absolutely, mm. India. Every time we go to new villages and just see what people are using and picking leaves off things and you work out what it is, it's just extraordinary. So, no, we're only at the tip of the iceberg. We can go forever.
Darren, can you go forever writing books?
You bet. I love writing. It's really good. So I don't think cookbooks will be going away. I really don't. I read stuff online. I read newspapers a lot on my iPad these days. But there's nothing quite like getting your hands on a cookbook and just flicking through the pages the first time. You know, the smell of a new cookbook, and although they're a bit of a pain if you have to move house. You couldn't part me with, you know, my collection of cookbooks. I'm sure.
Do you have a favourite one?
Not of your own. I don't know. I can't really choose. You know, I could probably give you a top 10, but yeah. I probably couldn't choose the favourite one. I've got one by Michel Brahe, Essential Cuisine, which is just an amazing book. It was way ahead of its time, and I always sort of refer back to that. I found it in Kitchen Arts and Letters cookbook shop in New York. But I think my favourite cookbook might be, or one of my favourites, is Raymond Morato's Chocolate.
Yes, well, that makes sense.
So that was an inspiration for me. So there's lots of books that have inspired me along my culinary journey at different stages. And you know, everyone sort of refers back to those sort of River Cafe books. And
I have, what is his name? Michel Roux.
Yeah.
Bought out a whole series of small books, and he has one that was eggs. And to
That's
me,
right,
you mentioned
yeah.
food porn earlier. It was an intellectual orgasm just looking through this thing. because just the way a perfectly soft-boiled egg is just broken and the yolk oozes onto some asparagus or something, it's magnificent.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And my other favourite, which is at the other end of the scale, is Massimo Bottura's book from Faden. It was beautiful, and he's beautiful. I love him.
Yeah, those Faden books are absolutely
They're
amazing.
Stunning, aren't they? I love them.
I think Dan Hunnett's got one out.
Well, I don't think it's ready yet.
He's doing it, isn't he? Yeah,
he's been writing it for about 2.5 years.
I think he's one of the first Australians.
Australian to have a book with Faden.
So I'm really looking forward to that because he's a good guy,
and I love those people from Faden.
It'd be beautiful.
Yeah. Jeanette, do you have a favourite book that's not one of yours, a favourite cookbook?
No, not really a favourite one. I love old books, so I love going into Berkelow's up in Noosa, Yamundi, and looking through the old books. Also, Books for Cooks down here.
I love Books for Cooks, and the fact that you buy second-hand cookbooks is great.
I just love second-hand cookbooks. So, yeah.
Mm. So they're just near the Vic Market. We should give them a shout-out because they're good.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah. They're great guys. Mm. They've been serving Melbourne well for years, and they always look after the chefs and all the foodies. And
Tim and your team at Books for Cooks. If you want it, they're just near the Vic Market. You can find them, and they seriously second-hand cookbooks that are 30 and 40 years old. They're amazing.
Bring joy to the world. Listen to us everywhere. Download the Joy smartphone app now at joy.org.au.
We have just 2 minutes before Mark and Andre take you travelling on the escape pod. I'm sure you're going to have a great deal of fun. So they don't know where they're going. They'll tell me eventually, or they'll tell you when they come on at 2 o'clock. I need to say goodbye to Darren Purchase and Jeanette George. We've been talking about books all day. I should have left that favourite book question to last. Give me a favourite book that is not a cookbook, Darren Purchase.
That is not... I don't think I've got one that's not a cookbook. I don't think I've read it. I don't think I've read one.
A book that doesn't involve food. Jeanette, have you got one?
No, I'm trying to think of one that doesn't involve food as well. I think it's just so top of mind.
I'll give you a book that does involve food, but is a book. It's called The Maestro's Table.
Right.
So the maestro is the brother of Stefano Di Pieri.
Yeah.
Sergio, who has this house in the Veneto, and people just sort of wander in and out. And he's an artist and a musician. And it's a fabulous book. It sort of makes you feel like you're in Italy when you're reading it. So
cool.
For the Maestro's Table, I think you should. Written by an Australian woman as well, an Australian really? Academic. Mm. So I think you should read that. That would be my
Flavors
tip.
Flavors of Italy is coming up.
I'm more than happy to help you research that one as well, Jeanette. Jeanette George and Darren Purchase have been my guests. If you want to know more about Flavors of Victoria, Flavors of Melbourne, Flavors of Melbourne 2, Flavors of Bali, and so forth and so on, and all of the books, where do they go to online?
Smudgeeats.com.au.
Smudgeeats.com.au. And if you would like to know more about Darren's latest book, Lamingtons and Lemon Tarts, you can go online to...
It's all good bookshops, or if you go onto birchandpurchase.com, I can personalise one for you.
And you can go into the sweet studio and get Lamingtons and Lemon Tarts right there.
Get it signed by me.
It's been a pleasure having your company. Tad and I will be back next Saturday. I can't remember what is on my agenda, but it will no doubt be as much fun as today. I've been Pete Dillon. This has been Cravings, and you are on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.